Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back. This is Jay Flemma Sports Report. I am Jay Flemma, and you are listening to the Golf News Net on iHeartRadio. It is segment two of our Postmasters show. We hope you all had as fantastic a time as we did. It really was incredible. There were moments when we were sure that he had it won, but he didn't. There were moments when we thought he had thrown it away for good, but he hadn't. And there were moments we thought his daughter, Poppy, was out there hitting the golf ball, and we wanted to tear our hair out. But with one of the wildest, weirdest, gutsiest, and most roller coaster final rounds in major championship history, Rory McIlroy has finally done it. He has achieved the ultimate level of golf immortality by completing the career Grand Slam. Now, for just a minute before we get to our next guest, I want to give you all a bit of historical reference. Take a look for a moment at this list of golf immortals who have not won the career Grand Slam. Sam Snead and Phil Mickelson never won the U.S. Open. And Arnold Palmer, Tom Watson, and Seve never won the PGA Championship. Immortals all, but they never accomplished what Rory did. Finally. Okay, it is a heady company and short list that Rory joined with that incredible victory. And here to talk a little bit more about that, and then also to tell us all about his brand new book about Tiger, the last guy to win the career Grand Slam, it's our old friend Kevin Cook, former editor-in-chief of both Golf Magazine and Sports Illustrated, and he's got a new book out about Tiger as well. But first, we're going to talk about the Masters. Kevin, give us your thoughts on that final round, the playoff, and you know how that Masters fits into golf history.
Hi, Jay. Well, as you said, it couldn't have been a more memorable final round. The drama all the way through, the fact that, as you said, you think that Rory has it in the bag. I was absolutely astonished, A, when he hits the wedge that gets wet, and then misses the putt to win in regulation. You're sure he's going to make that putt at 18 to win in regulation and to summon the discipline, the courage and the focus that he did to hit his approach shot on the playoff hole, I think was astounding. After Justin Rose heroically comes back, I mean, I've been down there any number of times and it seems like Justin Rose always leads the Masters after the first round. And then you don't see his name after that. And he fell down the leaderboard, came back, fought all the way through, and had to cool his heels, you know, hitting balls on the range, waiting to see about Rory, thinking, you know, and I was half certain that Justin's wasting his time on the range because Rory is going to make that putt at 18. He doesn't. I think it was sensational. You mentioned my new book about the Tiger Slam, which won an award in the UK yesterday as the Charles Turrett golf book of the year. And my suggestion was, you know, I said, because you have to film a little thank you, and I was very appreciative and thrilled. But I said that as an American, I do not want it, especially at this point, to be sound like I'm telling other countries what they should do. But in light of the Masters, it'd be a terrific thing if both Rory and Justin Rose were knighted. That hasn't happened yet, but I think it'd be a good idea.
There's a whole bunch of stages of knighthood as well.
They could be commanders of the British Empire, too, yes.
Yeah, well, yes, Knight Commander of the Victorian
Right.
Order, but don't you have to like save like a royal's life from a terrorist to get that one? There's a whole bunch of others though. They
I think
knighted Keith Richards and Mick Jagger. I guess they can knight
I'm,
golfers.
but
So.
we, winning the staging an end of the Masters like that has to be better than at least as good as saving a royal's life.
To a golfer, perhaps. I'll tell you, it's funny. Okay, Rory basically saved his own life with that. Maura McCarthy Stanford, a skiing writing co colleague of mine, actually had the best one-line zinger about it on Twitter. Yes, I'd like to report a crime. Rory McIlroy is actively trying to kill me. To which I responded, I think Rory McIlroy is trying to kill everyone, including Rory McIlroy.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's happened to me as the years go by is as it comes down to the stretch in the majors, I find myself rooting for everybody. I was pulling for Rory. I was pulling for Rose. It would have been a sensational thing for Rose to win. I was pulling for Bryson because he's a renegade who does things his own way, has his robotic putting style, and has his great YouTube channel. I think if you want everybody to win, then a playoff can't be a terrible disappointment.
Spoken like a true sports journalist. I'm rooting for the story.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's true.
The problem with rooting for the story of Justin Rose, though, would have been that we would also have had to have written the demise of McIlroy. And had he blown a second four shot lead on the back nine of the Masters 14 years later, okay, bookend failures like that, boy, oh, that would have been as disastrous as Mickelson at Wingfoot or Van de Velde in 99. Thank God we did not have to write a morality play.
I think that's true, and we could see the relief when he does win, and all the emotion comes out, the tears come out, and I think that was a great example of how much focus and attention and intensity is going on hidden inside these guys as they have to control themselves and their swings. Especially down the stretch in majors. And to see that erupt like that at the end shows that, and I think also you remember Jordan Spieth at 12. Spieth was going to win a whole bunch of
Oh, yeah.
majors at that point. Now, of course, he's had physical difficulties since then, but I think that's one of those things that it's in there somewhere if you have a collapse, and Rory certainly has had those. And to keep that aside, at least until it's all over, it was such an instructive thing to see.
It happens to every golfer, no matter who they are, a great collapse. It depends on how you bounce back, too. People don't remember that Jack Nicklaus went bogey, bogey, bogey on 16, 17, and 18 at Medina in the 1975 US Open because he came back and he won the British Open in 78 and the US Open again in 80, and the PGA again in 80. There are those moments where you're going to have to stare down the worst of the demons. Now, mind you, I'm having a bit of a laugh at one other thought, too, though, because you've mentioned some of Rory's screw ups, but not all of them. Yes, driest ball wins, and he flushed it on 13, but then he hits that fantastic approach shot on 15 and misses that putt. He hits the fantastic shot on 16 and misses that putt. And then he birdies 17 and then fans the approach on 18. He's up, he's done, he's up, he's done, he's up, he's done.
Yes, he sure is.
At one point, okay, Justin Rose had to be thinking to himself, what the heck is he doing? What is he
Well,
doing?
and yes, even on the playoff hole, I mean, Rose hit a hell of an approach shot
He did.
on the playoff hole, and then Rory steps up and drills it in there closer.
Okay.
It couldn't have been better.
What you saw there was Rose played it the way it's supposed to be played by the pros. You're supposed to play that little bank shot into the right side of the green and filter down, okay? Or sucking it back. You saw Rory go for the throat. He just said, "F that! I am going to go right straight for that pin," and just put it a dart, a lawn dart, to 3 feet, and That was the difference. Rose's putt just slid by on the edge. He had the putt, as people like to say, on 18 on Sunday. That's the putt that you're looking for coming down. You want to put it in the middle of the green, give yourself that 20 footer coming across the front. And instead, Rory just said, "Nope, I've got a chance here. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it now." I don't really know, Kevin, if he would have had much left in the tank to continue another playoff hole. He looked so spent once he finally had it holed.
Oh, he sure did. He looked like I do every once in a while when I make a 15-foot putt. The end reminded me of a talk I had with Mark O'Meara for the Tiger Slam, the book that's out now, and he talked about that level of focus, and he called it being in the zone, which we've heard, of course, many times. What he remembered was his own approach shot at 18, the year that that he won the Masters, 98, I think that was, and it was his total focus on the moment, on the ball, on the swing. And at 18, then he looked up, and from where the player is at that point, you can just see a corner of that bunker in front of the green, the bright white of that bunker. And he said that was the moment that he took a second, couldn't hear the fans or anything, and just thought, it is so beautiful here. That was a keen moment from O'Meara, still competing, but having a second outside the zone to appreciate what was going on around him.
Now talking about the zone, I wonder if I finally have been able to put my finger on a definition of what it means to be in the zone. I think it means when you achieve that moment in the game when there's no nerves. When there's no nerves at all, when you're just so smooth, so confident, and like you said, so focused, that everything goes as planned.
I think
To
that's very
me.
close to it. And maybe we can add, because I suspect, when I'm trying to hit what seems to be an important shot 10,000 levels below what they are trying to do, it's words that get in the way. And I think there's a sort of musicality to where you are if you're in the zone, if you're an elite athlete like
Yes.
that it's just a flow, and there aren't any words saying, oh, hit it solid and don't lose it to the left, and all those awful things that go back to the jokes is, oh, it'd be terrible if you hit it in the lake on the right, when you're in your backswing. So there may be something to that as well.
And maybe with that moment when there's no words, when you just put the tee in the ground, put the ball on there, you take your stance, you know what you're doing, and you hit it. And the other part about the zone is that everything goes as planned as well. But I think that those of us that are average Joes can be in the zone too. I mean, you've been in the zone on the golf course for a few holes at least.
Milliseconds, really, just a seconds at a time.
Milliseconds when compared to professional athletes. Yes, but even on our own level, we can find the zone, okay, where it's just automatic. Okay, I'll give you another example, okay? Even in just a pickup basketball game, okay, you're starting around, you're getting into the flow of the game, and then all of a sudden you get the hot hand. You hit four shots in a row, five shots in a row. You make a couple of good passes. Okay. And your buddy looks over at you and says, huh, all day you were doing nothing. All of a sudden I get on top of you. You turn into Larry Bird, and so, and we find those moments in life as well. And I think that that is, like you said, what makes an elite, truly exceptional athlete stand out above all of his peers, let alone head and shoulders above all the rest. So tell us, okay, where do you think Rory's accomplishment fits in the grand scheme of golf history? And I don't mean just this Masters. Where is he now in the pantheon of the very best?
Well, he certainly moved way up, but to do that, to join the five golfers who had achieved a career Grand Slam, I think it's very much worth remembering for all of your listeners, you mentioned Jack. Let's remember that Tiger and Jack are the only ones who had a triple. There's not a name for that yet, but the Grand Slam three times over. Rory certainly in the top 25 golfers of all time, I would think at this point, which he certainly wasn't before that. And it's going to be great to see him. And I think it's ridiculous after a guy wins the Masters. Every year there's a few folks, oh, what? He might just go on to win the Grand Slam this year. Don't even talk about that until he wins again. But he's certainly going to be looser. And I would suspect that the next major he wins, and we all expect him to win another one at least, when he wins at the end, it's not going to be that outflow of relief and emotion because he finally did get over that mountain.
I'll make an observation though. I don't think he's going to win all four. That would be quite an accomplishment. But I will note this. All four play to his strengths. Here's one of the things about Roth Rory and Justin Rose. They play well on all four surfaces that the majors are played on. Similar to great tennis players that, some of them couldn't play on clay, some play at Wimbledon, okay, but the true greats could play on all of them to win a Grand Slam. Okay, they can play on Open Championship style courses with links and wind. They can play on PGA Tour style courses. They can play on the old Golden Age masterpieces the U.S. Open's played on, and they can win at Augusta, which is its own character. Its own play that they have to recite the lines to better than anybody else. And so the fact that they are able to do that gives them a leg up on everybody else. And that's one of the things talked about the rarefied era that Rory reached, the top 25 golfers. It may even be smaller than that.
Could
We're
be.
talking with Kevin Cook, former editor-in-chief of Golf Magazine and Sports Illustrated. Tell us where we can read all your work right now, Kevin.
Well, golly, most of it is in the bookstore, in your local independent bookstore or at Amazon. The last several books have been fascinating to me. I've returned to golf. My first book, 13 books ago, was called Tommy's Honor, and it became a movie that still, I think, shows up on the Golf Channel from time to time. And I had not written a golf book in quite some time. Wrote one about the Challenger Space Shuttle disaster, which was fascinating, and then one about the remarkable events at Waco, Texas, in 1993, when David Koresh and his Branch Davidians took on the FBI. And that was a fascinating bit of recent American history. It was good to return to golf and to be able to put the Tiger Slam in perspective. The longer I worked on and the book, the more I felt that not only is the Tiger Slam the best feat in golf history, I think it's the best feat in sports history. And you talk to other sports writers, fans, you'll always hear about Joe DiMaggio. I think there's an asterisk on Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak because he had several favorable calls from official scorers on balls that might have been an error. He also played before Jackie Robinson during that 56-game hitting streak. That was before Jackie Robinson broke the color line, so he was playing against watered-down competition. Satchel Paige is pitching, mowing down hitters for the Kansas City Monarchs and the New York Black Yankees that same season, but DiMaggio doesn't have to face him. So there are many other candidates, and I think it's a really interesting bar discussion. I think the Tiger Slam is the number one feat in all of sports history.
Which do you think was the most remarkable accomplishment of the four?
Well, I think the most remarkable accomplishment has to be the U.S. Open, the 2000 U.S. Open at Pebble. Nobody's ever going to win a U.S. Open by 15 shots again. But the most fun, the most dramatic, the most thrilling was at Valhalla in the PGA when he goes up against Bob May, who is a wonderful character and who played out of his mind and is the one player that went toe to toe with Tiger Woods during the Tiger Slam, when Tiger is playing the best golf I believe that has ever been played before or since. And Bob May took him into a playoff. Tiger had to make a very slippery little putt just to reach a playoff. So that was a sensational matchup. And he, of course, went around went around St. Andrews at the Open Championship and never hit any of the 113, 112, I think it is, bunkers, used the same tee the entire tournament. And then, of course, he has this long months and months go by as the hype comes up. Can Tiger win four majors in a row before the 2001 Masters, which turns out to be this fabulous duel with his friend David Duval and his nemesis Phil Mickelson right down the stretch? It's the back nine on Sunday at Augusta, just like it ought to be. I think the Tiger Slam winds up being maybe the best drama in golf history, as well as what may be the best feat in sports history.
And how much insight do we learn about Tiger that we didn't know before? Give us some examples.
Well, there's a great deal. I mean, there was his thinking, the details, I think, such as after he wins the US Open at Pebble, what he does 3 days later is, out of friendship, he goes to Henderson, Nevada for the US public links, and he doesn't want to cause a scene, so he kind of hides out because his college friend Jerry Chang is playing in that tournament. So Tiger slips through, he's got a hat on and sunglasses on, slips through the very, very sparse crowd, and on the second hole goes out, meets Chang in the fairway, puts Chang's bag on his shoulder, and caddies for him the rest of the day. I think that's really something remarkable to do out of friendship. I think a thing that's practically forgotten about the Tiger Slam is that he was bold enough to put a new ball in play, the revolutionary ball that's going to change the entire game of golf. The year before, he's playing a Titleist Professional, just like everybody else. This now seemingly primitive ball covered with Bolata, although his was one of the urethane balls, with miles of rubber bands on the inside. Well, here comes a three-piece ball after O'Meara had told him, "You're playing an archaic golf ball. Bridgestone will make one just for you." And he wasn't even pushing Bridgestone. O'Meara was a top-flight guy, a strata player.
Yes.
And the ball was called a Nike ball and is still seen as a Nike ball. And we all see that clip of the when the chip falls at 16 and at Augusta, and there's that swoosh. But the ball was a Bridgestone ball. Nike farmed it out. There were any number of moments off the course that I think were fascinations about the Tiger Slam. And I was thrilled. There's a very interpersonal moment with Phil at 13 on Sunday, when Tiger preferred to hit a draw at that time, and he takes three wood at 13 and bangs it around the corner. And then Phil's hit a driver before that, hit a big high driver. It really suits him. Phil fades it around the corner, boom, way out there. The crowd, the gallery loves it. The patrons love that shot. They're going nuts. Phil had very carefully not watch Tiger swing all day because he doesn't want that in his head. Tiger then hits a three wood, whammo, takes a couple of hops beyond Phil's ball, and they're leaving the tee, and they had barely spoken. Phil says, "You always hit your three wood that far?" Tiger takes a beat and says, "No, sometimes farther." Now he had tried that shot 100 times, running up to the Masters, never quite hit it quite that well, but he's not going to let on about that.
Kind of reminds me of the time when Jason Day won the PGA at Whistling Straits and hit a 421-yard drive on one hole. Jordan Spieth is looking at him from the other fairway with a wide-eyed look. And for those of you in the listening audience, okay, Jason Day puts up his arm like Popeye and points at his bicep with a big
Ah,
smile.
not bad.
I think it was Faherty that said that the winning spikes now are on bigger cleats and on taller and bigger guys, and it does tend to happen frequently. Every once in a while, I get a skinny marink like Colin Morikawa winning, and I got to say, I thought that we might see a little more from him, but it was fun to see some great stuff from Ludwig Åberg as well. Shambo looks a lot different now. Okay, he's not the Incredible Hulk, the Incredible Bulk, the Incredible whatever you want to call it, and he's
Beefy.
become.
Tiger called him Beefy when he was really sizable.
Well, that's yeah, because he kept eating two steaks for dinner every day. Yeah, okay, that was a very apt nickname. He's also become a little bit less of a Poindexter. I used to be able to do a comedy routine out of the gobbledygook that he would spout in his interviews, but you can't do that anymore. Has he gotten more normal?
I believe so, and I think it's due to YouTube, as so many interesting things in golf are right now, that he applied himself. We can easily remember how unpopular he was, and he applied himself. He watched a lot of YouTube golf, saw what these other guys do. How do you be yourself? I remember years ago talking to Michael Jordan about Space Jam, and he said it's so hard to people think it's easy. Oh, you're only playing yourself. Well, the cameras are rolling. Oh, now act like yourself saying these lines. I think Bryson applied himself to being a really great YouTube personality, which he is. And that has helped him enormously in all other parts of his life, and made him, rather than one of the most unpopular players, a guy who has an enormous following, the biggest, I believe, the biggest YouTube golf following of all. He's ahead of even of Paige Spiranak in that department.
You'll forgive me if I don't follow that particular rabbit hole, but let's talk a little bit more about the book. How are sales going in the UK? It must have been very well to win an award. And where can people find the book here in America?
Well, we always want sales to increase, but they are fine. The book has gotten a bit sensational reviews, which I so much appreciate, and a good deal of attention. We're not even yet to the 25th anniversary of the first leg of the Tiger Slam, because that will be the U.S. Open. I hope that as things go along, and we reach the anniversary next spring, the 25th anniversary of the completion of the Tiger Slam, there's going to be an awful lot of talk about it. I hope people will read and enjoy the book. And again, always want people to support their local independent bookstores. And there's Amazon as well.
Well, here's hoping that that book will get some honors at the Masters next year at the Writers' Dinner. I know that they give out some book awards, and I'll
Here.
definitely be nominating it. Looking very much forward to adding that one to the massive collection. And by the way, you'll get a kick out of this. I entertained a lively crowd at the local Italian restaurant telling everybody about Titanic Thompson. Yes, we all had a good laugh about the time that he conned Capone with the lemon that he threw on top of the skyscraper.
There's no end to good Titanic stories, and Titanic, in my view, is such a natural movie hero, anti-hero.
Yes.
Gary McCord has called him the most cinematic son bitch who ever walked the earth. I think he is. And for your listeners who follow the Golfer's Journal, Tom Coyne's very well edited magazine, the upcoming issue of the Golfer's Journal, which comes out this month, has a piece of mine detailing the long road that Titanic has taken to the movies. And we still hope that that'll happen one of these days.
Kevin Cook, great to talk to you. Great success with the book coming up in the future. And we look forward to having you back on Jay Flemma Sports Report to talk even more about it as the major season progresses.
Thanks, Jay. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Everybody, we will be right back after this.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.